For the week of May 13th, 2012, this is Showbiz Sandbox, episode 147, the podcast that brings you all the dirt on the news making headlines around the entertainment world. In Los Angeles, I'm Jay Sperling Reich.
And in New York, in a soundproof booth, I'm Michael Gills.
Now, why are you in a soundproof booth?
Well, I'm not in a soundproof booth, but I feel like I am because I flew back from Alabama and my right ear has not cleared in the 4 days since I turned back here. It's literally, I've tried everything in the world you could think of, decongestant, nasal spray, chewing gum, standing on my head and reciting the Pledge of Allegiance, holding my nose and blowing my ears out, earwax removal, water removal. I've done everything and my right ear will not clear. It's driving me insane.
Well, hopefully you'll be able to hear some of the entertainment news.
You have no advice, no suggestions, no old wives' remedies to help me out here? You travel a lot.
I think that a week's worth of entertainment news should definitely help clear out your...
I hope so.
Yeah. Well, in an effort to help you, hear better again, on today's show, we're going to be discussing the network upfronts. Were your favorite shows renewed for next season, Michael? And what new shows do we have to look forward to in the upcoming season? We will definitely fill you in. Adele single-handedly helped the UK earn a bigger piece of music sales in 2011. And a huge movie star will be headed to Broadway for the first time, as will an adorkable multi-hyphenate. And just by my saying that, you should know who it is. Of course, during Big Deal or Big Whoop, we'll cover all the big entertainment headlines. But first, as always, we turn it over to entertainment journalist extraordinaire Michael Giltz to fill us in on the weekend's box office.
And the number one movie at the box office around the world is, of course, The Avengers, or Marvel's The Avengers, as I guess I should call it officially. It grossed another $198 million around the world. It has passed the $1 billion mark. It's keeping pace with Harry Potter Part 7, Part 2, and Avatar. As far as how quickly it reached $1 billion, it set records for reaching $200 million and $300 million quicker than any movie in North American history. It's, I think the sky's the limit here. People were saying, gee, I don't know if it'll pass, $1.3 billion to become, I can't imagine that it won't. At this rate, it looks just unbelievably unstoppable. $1.5 billion, even $2 billion seems, not out of the question right now. The big thing that pointed this out to me is how well it held during the weekdays. When I was looking at it, last Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, it was grossing $18 million, $17 million, $13 million, $12 million. You normally see those numbers between Christmas and New Year's, which is a crazy time for movie going. To see that at the beginning of the summer for this movie blew me away. It made $70 million Monday through Thursday. So you knew that second weekend was going to be huge. Of course, in North America, it grossed slightly over $100 million, $103 million, the biggest second weekend of all time, the 19th biggest weekend of all time in its second weekend. It's just a monster.
Well, I was talking to the head of a studio, which shall remain nameless, although you'll quickly be able to figure out it isn't Universal. And we were talking about The Avengers and how well it's doing and how it has effectively trounced Battleship overseas. And, as much as everybody's saying Battleship is doing so well...
No one said it's doing so well. It's made $215 million overseas.
Right.
It's fine. But it's not, it's not tearing up the world.
Right. And they basically have said that The Avengers just stepped right on its glory there. And it plummeted overseas as soon as The Avengers came out. They also said that they kind of knew that and got wind of the fact that Rich Ross was going to be, let go from Disney as Disney's chairman, the head of the studio. And they said they were a little surprised at it happening so quickly. But then in hindsight, when they looked at the timing, they said, you know what? It made perfect sense. They weren't going to let Rich Ross stay in that position, the head of Disney, and take all the credit for Marvel's The Avengers. So they had to let him go beforehand.
I don't think that's how they make those decisions.
Well, I'm sure there's
they
multifaceted.
Wanted if they decide to get him out, they get him out. And I said, well, we got to get him out 2 weeks early because a big movie's about to open. If he didn't deserve the credit for bringing in Marvel on the board to Disney, right?
No, he didn't.
I mean, and people still know he was there for the setup of the movie. So, it's not that his credit will disappear just because he's not was fired 1 week before the movie opened. They were unhappy with him. They got rid of him. Similarly, I don't think blaming other movies' poor performance on The Avengers makes any sense. You know what? When people go to the movies, they like to go to more movies. And other movies can flourish at the same time. The idea that one movie pushes another movie out of the way and, keeps that movie from doing well, it's malarkey. The number two movie at the box office is Dark Shadows. It opened to $65 million worldwide. And if The Avengers had never been made, I bet it would still have been making just about the same amount of money. It was an odd idea, poorly executed, dreadful, dreadful reviews. But Johnny Depp's a big star overseas. They'll probably, hopefully, make their money back and break even once all is said and done. But it was a poor opening. You know, in North America, it opened to $28 million, a little lower than they were hoping for, much lower than Alice in Wonderland and the Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, whatever that was called, the last go around.
Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Yeah,
this is one of their, you know, rare misfires. They together as a team are hugely profitable, but Tim Burton and Johnny Depp, this one had a bit of a misfire. They made a movie about a TV show that they loved, but they did a sort of a mock of it, which I don't quite get. But that's the number two movie at the box office, and I think that's the where it would have been no matter what. Number three at the box office around the world is American Reunion, the American Pie movie. It grossed another $16 million. It's just past the $200 million mark. And number four is Battleship, which grossed another $11 million, basically overseas. It opens here in North America this weekend. It's gotten terrible reviews. This movie was going to collapse anyway in its second and third and fourth weekend because it's not a good movie. Bad movies make a lot of money all the time, of course, like Transformers. But this one did not look like it was going to carry on for weeks and weeks and suddenly get blindsided by the Avengers. It's just a bad movie. It has grossed $250 million worldwide. And number five is Zac Efron's The Lucky One, another $6 million. It's at $76 million and counting. Number six is Think Like a Man, another $6 million. That's at $82 million and counting, a great total for a movie that cost $12 million to make. And number seven is the animated film The Pirates, Band of Misfits, from the Aardman people, the folks who bring you Wallace and Gromit. It's made $5 million. It's at $97 million worldwide and counting. I have to say, I'm a little disappointed because I think they should be a bigger name brand. They should be able to bring in more people. It got pretty good reviews. Everybody I know thinks it's a pretty good movie. I think it should be more like $200 million worldwide.
But that's Aardman. I mean, all of their movies kind of underperform. They do really well with...
Except for Wallace and Gromit and Chicken Run.
That's right. But they don't, you know, they do great with critics and people who love films, but then they don't do well with children. I don't get it.
Well, I mean, again, Chicken Run and the Wallace and Gromit stuff are incredibly popular and successful. It's just their name brand has not extended to the other stuff that they've made. Mind you, Flushed Away was not great, but this one hopefully will establish them more and more as a brand that can be trusted. We shall see.
Yeah, they didn't Pixar themselves, that's for sure.
No, not yet. And number eight around the world is 21 Jump Street, another $4 million. It's at $184 million and counting. And number nine around the world is The Hunger Games. It was a little tricky. I couldn't quite get any overseas box office figures for The Hunger Games. I'm not sure if it's just dropped off the map completely or what. But it made about $4 million. It's at $519 million worldwide and counting. At number 10 is The Five-Year Engagement, another $3 million. Not very good for this film. It's at $24 million and counting. Titanic 3D. It's at $340 million worldwide in this re-release. And at number 12, our old friend, the Best Exotic Marigold Hotel, has expanded a bit. It grossed $2.6 million, basically in North America. Worldwide, it's at just under $80 million. It broke into the top 10 on 178 screens here in North America. And it's going to expand to about 800 theaters in the next 2 weeks. So those of you who haven't had a chance to see it will get that chance pretty darn soon.
Well, you know, a couple things here. First, The Hunger Games. I was talking to somebody at CinemaCon who was the CFO of a large chain in South Africa of Ster-Kinekor. And she was talking about how they had yet to go digital, convert their screens to digital cinema. And they were having trouble getting prints. And they had requested 50 prints of The Hunger Games, and they couldn't get them because Lionsgate didn't have secondhand prints because, of course, in the U.S., most of the screens are now digital. They didn't have enough secondhand prints, and they weren't going to strike a whole lot of new ones. So they only got 25 to 30 prints to show in their theaters.
That's interesting.
So that's actually kind of throttling, if you will, the money that Hunger Games can make. And I'm sure that is the case in other territories, especially non-English-speaking territories.
How many theaters in North America are digital only now? I mean, how many places do not have projections anymore?
Well,
or I guess theaters had the option, but they're just showing projection more and more. So what's the deal?
Well, the last I heard, it was somewhere up above 25,000. So I'd have to double check that because it really does change on a weekly and monthly
25,000 out of what?
Out of about 40,000.
So there's still 15,000 screens that are projection only?
35 millimeter, yes.
Yes, okay.
And there will always be film projectors out there because, you know, for revival houses and certain...
we're talking first-run theaters.
Though. Yes, correct.
That's interesting. So Hunger Games has made $500 million worldwide. I bet, just like the Twilight movies, that this has set up the series and that the film number 2 and 3 will do much better worldwide. It's made $386 million in the U.S. and only about $140, $130 million overseas. So it's made triple in North America what it did overseas. A movie like this should have done at least the same, if not more, overseas. I bet the second and third film, we see this at $600, $700, $800 million.
Yeah, I don't doubt that at all, actually, because I think certainly for some people, it probably put the property on the map and they went out and read all the books.
Let me ask you a question you don't know the answer to.
Okay.
The Avengers, second weekend, 3D, yes. Do we know?
Oh, I'm sure I could find that out, but I don't have it off the top of my head, no.
I think it's going to be very soon when we see a 3D movie open to less than 50%. You know, a big 3D movie that's supposed, this is a 3D movie. If you're going to go see a movie in 3D, this is the movie you would go see it in. It's not a movie that happens to be in 3D. It's like a big superhero geek boy flick. You want to see stuff thrown at the camera. And I still feel like if you were going to go pay money to see 3D, this is the sort of movie you do it for. And the fact that it only opened at 52% 3D ticket sales opening weekend, to me, is very indicative of people getting sick and tired of 3D. So we'll have to see.
But the film wasn't shot in 3D. I don't know why.
But that's most many films aren't. Many films are repurposed at the end. That's fine. That doesn't mean it was designed to be seen in 3D. They shot it and thought about it and planned for it to be shown in 3D. It wasn't an afterthought like Clash of the Titans.
Yeah, and I can't seem to find what the 3D gross was this weekend. So
I'd also like to know can you get city by city breakdowns? I think Birmingham, Alabama must have one of the lowest per screen averages, one of the lowest sort of profitable cities given its size for movie going imaginable. I couldn't believe it. It still wasn't sold out, you know, that opening weekend. Here I am back in New York. My friend tries to go see the Avengers on Tuesday night. It's sold out. He can't see it. The next 3 or 4 screenings, 7, 7:30, 8, 8:30, he was going to have to wait till 9 or 9:30 to see the movie. It was sold out during the week, you know, because people go to movies in New York. But Birmingham, Alabama, they're just not carrying their weight. So it'd be fun to see what cities, as far as, you know, cities 500,000 to a million, who ranks lowest or highest as far as movie attendance.
That's actually a good, and that could be an interesting study. I agree with you to see
I'm sure people have done it.
I'm sure you're right.
Stanley Kubrick did it many years ago.
Oh, he did?
Yeah, you know how Stanley Kubrick was one of the first people to sort of pioneer that screen by screen analysis. He went through every screen in the country when he was planning the release of his movies and said, this theater in Manhattan does a lot better than that theater in Manhattan. So I'm going to book this one because they draw the better crowd or the crowd that I want for my movie. And they have better grosses and attendance than that one for various reasons. And so he would choose theater by theater where he wanted his movie to play in each city. Yeah, I like that screen in Chicago. I like that screen in Minneapolis. I like that screen. And he encouraged and pushed forward Variety to do that city by city analysis and per screen average and all that stuff. He did it first to map out the distribution of his movies. And that led Variety to do that sort of analysis and break down city by city and screen by screen.
Well, talk about a guy who micromanages things. That's interesting.
Right. If you were micromanaging The Amazing Spider-Man, what would you have to tell us?
Well, yeah, I was going to say, you know, Battleship, we're talking about Battleship as we have for the past couple of weeks because it's opened overseas. It opened, I think, 3 or 4 weeks ago overseas. And The Avengers also opened overseas first before it opened here in North America. And now The Amazing Spider-Man is going to be released in India ahead of the U.S. opening. Now, there are no reasons given. This is a story from The Hollywood Reporter. There are no reasons given other than that maybe one of the stars of the film is Irfan Khan, who was in Slumdog Millionaire, and plays
24, I think.
And 24. And so maybe, you know, because there's some homegrown talent there, they're releasing it early. You know, usually when this occurs, it's because of a holiday schedule or school
sports.
Sporting schedules or school schedules. Really on the periphery of that, it could be to combat piracy, although I highly doubt that's the reason they're opening it here.
4 days makes no difference.
Yeah, no, not much. Sony's doing the same thing, though, with the 23rd installment of the James Bond franchise, Skyfall.
It opens a week early, right?
A week ahead, yeah. They're opening November 2nd, and then I guess a week later it opens here in North America.
This is the point. It doesn't matter anymore.
Nobody's
going to blink an eye. Nobody's going to blink an eye if The Avengers opens a week early overseas or 2 weeks here. Or 3. You know, what will raise eyebrows is releasing a movie over 6 or 8 months. Like we have The Avengers doesn't open in Japan until August. I'm not quite sure why.
That may have something to do with schedules as well, school schedules. Right.
But I think that's a long way away. That's 4 months later. I think that's, you're going to see less and less of that. Day and date is, of course, what they do a lot. But I think day and date now means within a couple weeks.
Yeah, and it used to be. It used to be that you would have, you know, this delay in release patterns because of a couple of reasons. One, you had marketing issues. So you had to first get all the marketing material. You had to have it translated. You had to have local posters made. And then you had 35 millimeter film prints, which were used in North America or wherever the film opened first, and then sent to other territories. So in Japan, the reason for the delay is they had to either dub it or they had to laser etch the subtitles into it. And those were secondhand prints that were being used. Now with
digital, they must have seen horrible prints overseas.
That is correct. Yes. Australia, for instance, always complained that they were getting secondhand prints of English language movies, and they were horrible. And now with digital cinema, there are fewer and fewer 35 millimeter prints and fewer reasons to delay your opening other than, you know, resources and marketing manpower.
Right. So 4 days early in India, 2 weeks later in Japan, 5 days later in Mexico. It doesn't matter. They're all going to, it's a puzzle. They're going to get them pretty much as close together as they can. I think that's the general trend, especially for a big movie like this. A smaller film, of course, you platform and go around the world and build popularity and excitement. A big movie like The Avengers or Spider-Man, you're going to pretty much go everywhere you can, as soon as you can, in the right way that makes sense. And you don't get caught up and worried about it being, uh-oh, it's in India a few days earlier. Are people in North America going to feel cheated? Of course not.
No, I mean, one of the other issues, like with Battleship, besides the football or soccer in the EU, was that you have to have talent available to do a worldwide tour and bring them to Tokyo to do a press day or two, bring them to Moscow to do a press day or two, bring them to London to do a press day. And you can't have them in 50 places at once. So that's another issue that is usually taken into consideration on films where there's a star that's worth bringing around the world.
Though now with TV and hookups, they just sort of, you know, they don't need to hit every blogger in the world. So I think a lot of times now you're seeing, you know, you hit one or two big things in Europe, you hit everybody, you hook everybody up. You know, you don't need to physically transport your star to Japan and every part of the globe. You do it for the big openings, but I think like it's a little more concentrated now than it used to be.
But now, speaking of bloggers, you know, there's no good transition to this. We should just talk about television.
Sure.
Were you surprised by any of the upfronts? First, we should probably explain what upfronts are to those who don't know.
Go ahead.
Okay, well, upfronts are when the television networks gather everybody in New York and announce their fall schedules. And really, this is a pitch to advertisers. They usually have a few clips of the upcoming shows from the pilots, and they explain what's going to be on their fall schedule and try to entice them into buying advertising for their upcoming season. And a good percentage of that advertising is sold during the upfronts. I think $9 billion worth of advertising last year was sold during the network upfronts. And it used to be that just NBC, ABC, and CBS would hold upfronts and trot out all the stars to their shows, and including some of the shows that are recurring, that are coming back. And now it's these things have become huge events that are fill Radio City Music Hall, and it's not just the big networks, but you have TBS and a whole bunch of other networks doing their own upfronts. I think did Netflix or do an upfront? I know NCM, the pre-show advertising group, did an upfront this year.
Yeah, well, you've got everybody gathered together. You want to reach out to them. It just makes sense.
Yes, it's all about advertising and the new television shows.
That's right. So there's a lot of announcements. This is where they finally make their decision. We're going to cancel this show. We're going to cancel that show. We're going to extend this show. Something like 30 Rock, they said, okay, we're going to give it 13 more episodes, and that'll be the series finale. So that was a big decision that they made. That's what you can expect if you're a 30 Rock fan. Other shows, move from major networks into cable. People always talk about HBO or Netflix or somebody picking up a network show that they love. It rarely happens. It doesn't happen that very much that a show switches from one network to another, or even less so switches to cable. But it does happen enough that you can have a little hope. And that's what happened to Cougar Town, the ABC sitcom. This didn't surprise me too much. Cougar Town has about 61 episodes that they've already made. And the cable channel TBS picked it up off the ABC network channel and said they would extend the show. And they're going to order, I think, about like 30 episodes all at once. They're going to say, do 30 more episodes, something like that, to get it close to that magic number of 100, which was the classic number you needed in order to strip a show Monday through Friday. You could show it Monday through Friday with 100 episodes. You could get through a year without repeating the series too much. And that's what they're sort of going to do here. You know, you repeat the whole series three times a year if you do it Monday through Friday.
That's true, and, yeah. And that's what strip a show, that we should explain, that's what strip a show means, is put it on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Right, it's the classic old days of syndication. Nowadays, they might do an hour of a show, or they might do it just 2 days a week, or it'll be on a cable channel. They'll do it for 3 months and then stop for a while. So there are no rules anymore. But that was sort of the classic old school formula. They've got 60-plus episodes. They're going to probably order about 30 more. And so, you know, Courtney Cox's comedy will continue on TBS and reach, you know, a very healthy number. So that was not a surprise. But there's one thing that really did blow me away. And that was that NBC canceled the Kathy Bates drama, Harry's Law.
Why did that blow you away?
Huh?
Why did that blow you?
I'm absolutely stunned. This show, NBC has no hits whatsoever. It's desperate for television. It has no drama or comedy hits at all. Harry's Law, no matter where they put it on the schedule, drew an audience. They would double their lead in. No matter where they went, they pulled in viewers. The problem was that their viewers were not 12 years old. Advertisers only want 18 to, you know, 49, and Harry's Law audience was older. It was the people in their 40s, 50s, 60s, which people, these are people who buy things, you know, but it's a hit. It's as close to a hit as they have. They have no building blocks whatsoever. And the idea that they would just throw away a show that was working commercially and creatively because they felt like it was too old, it wasn't drawing young enough viewers, it's crazy to me.
Well, you know, sometimes there are other reasons why they decide to not pick up a show for another season, including contracts that have to be renewed that might be a little too pricey, the cost of production.
Not a case in this show.
Yeah.
It's only been on the air for one season. It's NBC. It's Kathy Bates. She's not going to demand the moon. I'm sure everybody was ready to keep this show working. There's no excuse for this. It's just pure, stupid, short-term thinking. They have a show that if they actually had a show leading into it, or, you know, this could be a blockbuster top 10, top 20 show. On CBS, this would be a top 20 show.
And think about who owns them now. You have Comcast, who, you know, they've got investors to please, shareholders to please.
Well, yeah, you please shareholders by keeping holding on to hit shows.
Well, I think they maybe...
You don't please them by tossing a hit show into the wastebasket when you have nothing else on your channel.
Well, they very well may be learning that.
Well, Again, I was stunned. I predicted that there was no way they would cancel this show. I was wrong. Now I'm going to think that somebody else picks it up. Because to me, if you look at the numbers it did, this is a no-brainer. You saw JAG being dumped by NBC, and that was picked up by CBS and became a massive decade-long hit for them and spun off NCIS and NCIS LA. NCIS is practically the number one show in the country right now. I will not be surprised if Harry's Law is picked up by another network. CBS has no room on their channel. They have so many hits. They really don't have any room. It's the natural home for Harry's Law. But somebody somewhere should be smart enough to pick up this show, whether it's TNT or a major network or somebody, because this is a hit show.
Well, maybe they can put it where CSI Miami was scheduled, because that show was canceled by CBS.
That's right. You know, if you come to our website, you look at the link, you'll find a list of all the shows that have been renewed, all the shows that have been canceled, and a list of some of the shows that are coming up in the fall. So CBS canceled CSI Miami. They were sort of not sure whether they would do CSI New York or CSI Miami. They ended up killing Miami. Sorry for Miami fans. No surprise that they canceled Unforgettable, which filmed down the block for me. I'm thrilled. Now I can have my park back. And NYC 22, which was the Robert De Niro series that he was sort of involved in about young cops, of sort of anonymous drama. So, and other shows were canceled early on. One show that they canceled was A Gifted Man, starring Patrick Wilson. He was a little peeved because they didn't even bother to call him. He just found out that the show was canceled, which is not a very classy thing to do.
Well, over on Fox, Alcatraz, the J.J. Abrams show, was canceled, as was, we've already talked about, Terra Nova, and I Hate My Teenage Daughter, The Finder, which was actually a really fun show to watch, was canceled. It never did find an audience.
That's right, and J.J. Abrams, of course, will be back in the fall. He's, of course, working on the next Star Trek reboot, not reboot, but Star Trek series, the film that's coming out, the next one in the franchise. But he has Revolution, that's going to be on NBC. That is a post-apocalyptic series of some sort, and he got the plum assignment, the only slot that NBC has to offer to entice anyone. They said, J.J. Abrams, come to our network, and we will put your new show behind The Voice. It's the only hit that they have. So The Voice will be on Mondays at 8 p.m., and it will be followed by the J.J. Abrams show, Revolution. The Voice, of course, is now running twice a year, which is a little scary. They were just a spring show, a winter show. Now they're going to be airing in the fall as well. They have the same judges coming back in the fall, but now they're thinking about getting a new set of judges for the spring because those artists, Katy Perry and Blake Shelton and CeeLo, they have careers. They did not commit to a year-round run of television, and they may need to get a whole new batch of judges for the next winter edition. But The Voice will be going in the fall. It'll be competing with The X Factor. It'll be on Monday nights, and J.J. Abrams' show will have the only time slot that NBC has that is of any use whatsoever.
And this is also, it's not Katy Perry, by the way, it's Christina Aguilera.
Ah, Christina Aguilera, how awful of me.
Yes, well, they're easily interchangeable, I suppose.
Hardly.
I know, I'm kidding. Over on NBC, we were talking about what they canceled. They also canceled Are You There, Chelsea? And Awake, a show that really should have been a movie because the whole, are you awake or are you dreaming thing, it worked for a couple of episodes, but after a while, I just got like ticked off at it.
Well, that's the trend of television. They're so caught up in incredibly complicated series with, massive backstories. And, you feel like if you miss an episode, you got to do your homework. It gets a little tiresome. You have to be a really good show to make me want to do that sort of thing. And when everybody's doing it, it's a little, come on, just make a show and tell a story. They did renew Smash, which I was not sure about. It did show a little bit signs of life. Ratings wise towards the end of its run this season. It's going to come back mid-season with no reruns. So they realize this is not a show that you can put in reruns or stretch out to a full season. They're going to bring it back in the winter, just like they used to do with 24 over on Fox and a lot of other shows. This is a big trend of the fall. They're going to have shows come back for a limited run without reruns. 30 Rock will come back in the winter with no reruns. Smash will come back in the winter with no reruns. It just makes sense when you're competing with cable. People want shorter runs. They don't want to have to do 22 episodes, and they don't want a lot of reruns because fans won't stand still for it.
Well, I would agree with that kind of programming because when it's so easy to just switch the channel to the other 500 networks that you could watch on your cable box or your satellite provider, a rerun is like saying, "Please change the channel."
Yeah, but that means you have to double the amount of programming you create. Because networks, they have summer where they used to take off the summer. They had fall and spring where they'd have a show on and they'd have, 10 or 12 reruns mixed into that original run. So suddenly now they need a show for fall, a show for spring, a show for summer. They got to double or triple their programming budget. So it's a huge new, demand on them. And they're competing with all the cable channels that are creating their own TV shows. Not only so many writers and creators and stars to go around, it ain't easy.
Well, over on the CW, they really canceled the Hater, remodeled Ringer, and The Secret Circle. But now you can watch a Beauty and the Beast reboot or The Carrie Diaries, which is like Sex in the City, but in high school.
That's right. They kept a few shows. I mean, CW is barely a network. It's like four or five days a week, and they have no hits whatsoever. I guess The Vampire Diaries is as close as they get to a hit.
What about America's Next Top Model or 90210?
That's way faded. No, 90210 is nothing.
Okay, what about Gossip Girl?
They're all in less than 2 million viewers. The Vampire Diaries is the only show that breaks the 2 million viewer barrier. These shows barely exist in the ratings world.
Well, I was surprised over on NBC that Whitney and The Office were renewed. Well, I guess The Office they want to bring to a conclusion. But Whitney, that was kind of on the bubble.
No, I mean, The Office is their Thursday night lineup of sitcoms are dead in the water. They do not register. NBC has no television shows whatsoever. They have football and they have The Voice, which they're not going to pummel to death by bringing it back in the fall. So that's risky. They have literally no hits. Their Thursday night lineup is fourth or fifth place. It's a dreadful, dreadful lineup. Those shows have no audience. Community, Parks and Recreation, 30 Rock, The Office, those shows are shadows of their former self, and their former selves were not hits.
Well, Community, when they took it off the schedule, there was this big outcry from fans about, oh, they're going to cancel the show. Turns out they brought it back for the fall.
They brought it back previously. It did well for a week or two and then sunk back down to the minimal levels that all those shows have on NBC on Thursday. Community is coming back next season. It's going to be moved to Friday night with Whitney. And they're saying, no, we're not burying it on Friday nights. We want it to be there. Fans will follow it. But these shows are not hits in any way, shape, or form. If they had any sort of schedule, they would not be bringing back The Office and Whitney and all these shows. They're just desperate. But if you go back to CW, there's good news in canceling sometimes because it's hard to say goodbye to a show. I know The Secret Circle, my friend Zoe, is thrilled that they canceled the show because she's been watching it. She can't stop watching it, but thank God they pulled the plug on it. She didn't really like it, but she's been sucked into it, and she keeps following it, and thank God it's dead, so now she can stop watching it.
And Kevin Bacon, it looks like he's going to be coming to the small screen. He's going to be on a show called The Following over on Fox.
Well, there's all sorts of, big stars coming back in television. Kevin Bacon, this is sort of a Dexter-like show. It's about a serial killer who has all sorts of imitative serial killers. He's got groupies who try to serial kill people in honor of him or following his methods and his madness. And so you have Kevin Bacon as the guy trying to track down the serial killer and all his minions. So, you know, you get to capture and stop a serial killer each week without losing your uber villain, you know, who's this big guy who they're all imitating. So each week or whatever, every couple of weeks, he can, you know, come to a conclusion and track down a serial killer and stop the killing. And yet you still have the big villain pulling the strings, you know, mysteriously out there somewhere, which we'll have to wait for the series finale, I imagine.
Well, on ABC, GCB, Man Up, Missing, Pan Am, The River, all canceled, and Work It.
Well, all bad.
Yeah, well, that's true. I'm interested in Malibu County. Reba McEntire, a country singer in California. That could be interesting.
Well, you know, she had a hit sitcom for quite a few years, Reba. I know. So she's a proven TV star. She's an amiable presence. And it'd be good to have her singing on the show as well. So that's nice, because on her last show, she didn't really sing much. She was just a housewife. So that's fun. And there'll be more singing on Nashville, a show I've already mentioned. Connie Britton of Friday Night Lights is a Nashville star who's forced to tour with a young upstart, you know, in her entourage. So it's sort of like Country Strong, that Gwyneth Paltrow movie. Country Strong, this series.
I'm just glad Wife Swap was renewed. I mean, I was really worried. It seemed like doesn't have strong enough numbers, but no, it's coming back.
Well, that's an example of a show where they're just desperate for cheap reality programming to fill up the schedule.
I was actually, in all seriousness, very happy to see that Suburgatory was coming back.
Well, it did pretty well. It had it's not a big hit, but you know, the Tim Burton show came, Tim Allen show came back, and Suburgatory and Modern Family in the middle. Modern Family sort of faded just a tad. I think maybe the bloom is off the rose just a little bit on Modern Family. I think it's just peaked already, but we'll have to see. But they have a pretty strong, solid lineup of shows like The Middle and Happy Endings, which was perhaps a bit of a surprise to come back. But they've got a pretty good lineup of sitcoms. NBC is flush with sitcoms. All they're doing is sitcoms. They have like a gazillion sitcoms on their network. None of them are hits. They have no hit sitcom to put as a lead-in to lead into another sitcom. So they have no way to launch these shows. But they're risk throwing every sitcom at the wall, hoping to try and build up a block like they used to have.
Well, over on CBS, they're going with the...
I think we're making people's heads spin. ABC, CBS, Fox.
I know. I'm just jumping around because I'm looking at CBS here. They have this show, Elementary, that they've picked up. It's going to star Johnny Lee Miller as a modern-day Sherlock Holmes, and Lucy Liu is going to play Dr. Watson. I'd watch Lucy Liu read the phone book. So,
Well, there's Sherlock right now on the BBC and here in North America on PBS Masterpiece Mystery, which is a modern Sherlock Holmes starring Benedict Cumberbatch and Martin Freeman, who, of course, plays Bilbo Baggins in The Hobbit. So we've just got a modern Sherlock Holmes on TV right now that's doing pretty well in the UK and here. So this seems like a little, I don't know if it's desperation or, I mean, we're doing it right now. So why are you doing another show like that?
I have no idea. Let's call the folks over at CBS.
Like Ryan Felipe as a golden boy. He's going to be the youngest police commissioner ever and the prettiest, I imagine.
Yes. Well, you know, he made most of his name. Listen to me. He's got a bigger name in movies, much does, you know, Dennis Quaid.
Absolutely. He's in a show called Vegas, which is set in 1960s. And he plays a rodeo cowboy turned sheriff of Vegas who has to square off against Michael Chiklis, who, of course, is working for the mob. So, you know, wonder how that'll turn out.
Well, you've got movie stars that are headed into the small screen with Kevin Bacon and Dennis Quaid, so they're going to be on television. And then you have television and movie stars headed to the theater.
Oh, segue. That's right. You've got Tom Hanks is probably the biggest news in theater. He's just in negotiations, really, to talk about taking on the role of a play being written by Nora Ephron. It's a play based on the life of Daily News columnist Mike McAlary.
Wasn't he Newsday? I mean, I guess he bounced around a lot.
I'm just reading the notes that you delivered.
Okay. Well, you know, I actually remember his work in the 80s. He was like on the crime beat, and he'd always be, you know, covering one, you know, whether it was police department corruption or some citywide corruption or some scandal somewhere. The crime beat was his purview, and he was a great writer. I always loved reading his writing, and he died tragically very early at 41. Due to cancer, and the same year he died, he won the Pulitzer Prize for commentary, and so that's what this I am assuming it's a play and not a musical. That's what this is going to be about. Tom Hanks, as you say, is in negotiations to play Mike McElery.
It's called Lucky Guy. It's not a one-man show. It's a multi-character piece. It's going to be directed by George C. Wolfe, one of the great directors of Broadway right now. He's won the Tony Award for Angels in America and Bringing the Noise, Bringing the Funk. He also headed the Public Theater for a number of years. So this is a blue-chip product in the works.
Well, you know, this would be his Broadway debut, but I've actually seen Tom Hanks a couple of times on stage. Because
really?
When I was over at CAA, I worked for an agent that every year, she represented Rita Wilson, and every year Rita Wilson did this fundraiser for the Shakespeare Company. I can't remember exactly what the name of the company was. You'll have to forgive me. But it was a Shakespeare company that put on Shakespeare plays with young students. And they did this kind of celebrity reading of a Shakespeare play every year. And the agent didn't want to have to like call around to all the clients and see who would participate. So they gave that job to me. And every year I would call around and get people to show up and Phil Hartman 1 year.
Obviously Tom Hanks showed up because Rita Wilson was his wife, his wife.
Yeah. And they would be on stage with the kids doing a reading of whatever it was, Romeo and Juliet or Twelfth Night, whatever it was. It was, he was a lot of fun on stage.
Well, cool. Well, I don't know if he's ever done any theater officially.
Probably not.
I don't think so. I mean, we've been known his career pretty much since Bosom Buddies. He did little minor horror films and this and that, and then Bosom Buddies and then films. So he certainly hasn't slipped in any theater while we weren't paying attention. So I, for all I know, it's his theatrical debut.
Yeah, no, and it makes sense that at this point in his career that he would do a Broadway show.
Well, I mean, if it's a good property, it makes sense. I mean, he hasn't had a hit movie in a while, though he's definitely produced and overseen some terrific television work like The Pacific. So he's certainly not a done deal as far as Hollywood is concerned. But, if you find a good property, of course, why not? But never done theater. It's pretty scary to start on Broadway.
Well, speaking of good material, if you find the right material, Zooey Deschanel is going to star in A Coal Miner's Daughter on Broadway, according to Loretta Lynn, who visited the Grand Ole Opry on Thursday night and made
the
announcement.
Well, they had a press event, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They had a press event, and she made this announcement that this, she, of course, Zooey Deschanel is on New Girl, which I assume was picked up.
Yep.
And so she's going to be doing this this show. It doesn't say when. But,
well, it's scheduled for the fall, but okay. This is what I don't understand. They said that her television commitment, obviously New Girl, the sitcom on Fox, will not conflict with her appearance in this show. I don't understand how. I mean, it takes like 30 weeks to film 22 episodes of a sitcom, I think, or at least 24, 25 weeks. I'm not sure how she can commit to this show and be in it long enough to make it a hit if she has to go back to film episodes of New Girl. So I just don't understand how it works out. Even if you finish the season of filming episodes and then you start and you launch and you go in a show, usually you commit to at least 6 months or a year of a Broadway show, usually a year, frankly, to make sure it's a hit. Musicals are very expensive. So I don't see how she can be available long enough to turn the show into a hit. They'd have to recast it right away. And frankly, Zooey Deschanel is going to be the big draw starting out. So I'm not quite sure how it works out, but they insist that New Girl will not conflict with her commitment to this musical.
Yeah, and let's face it. I mean, she can sing, she can act, so, you're right.
She's... Well, it's a good fit.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
I mean, it's a good fit now. She's become more confident on stage. When she began doing her music, which is the group She and Him with M. Ward, who I didn't get to see this week because I can't hear, so I couldn't go to the concert.
And he was really great at Coachella, but that's another story.
Yeah, my friend Noam saw him and said the concert was just terrific, a really great show. So he and Zooey Deschanel have a duo called She and Him. And when they started out, she was a little tentative. She was good on the album, but she was not a stage presence. She was a little tentative, a little unsure of herself, gaining confidence as she went along. And she's become stronger, and I'm sure she's worked on her voice and on exercises, and just touring will help. And now she's a much better presence on stage. You can see her now. She comes on network. She's not, Celine Dion. She's not belting it out to the stars. She doesn't have a big voice, but she's a much more confident performer. She has a much stronger voice. She's been working on that. So I think now after this, last 2 years of touring, now she's in a place where she could be better. If she'd done Coal Miner's Daughter 3 years ago, I don't think it would have been a good idea. But seeing her growth, I think it's ready for her. She's ready to tackle it.
Well, Coal Miner's Daughter was a movie and a book first. And Flashdance was a movie that is going to be headed to Broadway. It looks like.
I wonder if they ever did a book adaptation of the movie Flashdance. You know, one of those movie to book things. What do they call them? You know.
I have no idea.
You know what I mean? Where they turn the script into a book. You know, they just do a quickie little thing like Close Encounters had a book spinoff. They just take the script and they turn it into a book. I wonder if they bothered with Flashdance. You know, the water splashes down on the stage.
I highly doubt it.
I do too.
Well, it looks like they're going to spend $12 million on this musical. And of course, it's based, as we mentioned, on the 1983 film. It was kind of a music, Simpson-Bruckheimer production.
Yes, and it's really the news here is that it's been delayed. It was going to come in the fall of 2012. Now it's pushed back to 2013 at the least. So people who love Flashdance will just have to wait. Of course, it sounds like a ridiculous idea, but you never know.
True.
There's a lot of other shows coming that are confirmed in the summer. We have Harvey, a revival of the play starring Jim Parsons of The Big Bang Theory. He plays the Jimmy Stewart role from the movie, the guy who may be a drunk, but whose best friend is a giant invisible rabbit. And then there's Diner, the Barry Levinson film. That's being turned into a musical with songs by Sheryl Crow. There's Chaplin, a musical about Charlie Chaplin, which has been much revised since it played in L.A. a few years ago. There's a musical version of Rebecca. There's a revival of The Mystery of Edwin Drood with Cheetah Rivera. A revival of Annie. So take that, Newsies. You're not going to be the only kid-friendly musical on Broadway. The British hit Matilda is coming to Broadway. That probably won't make it till the winter of 2013. And I'm really looking forward to Dolly Parton's musical. We're not sure of a date for that yet, but she's going to come to Broadway with a musical about her life.
Didn't she do 9 to 5?
She hopes to have a much bigger success.
Okay. Now, speaking of success, we can go on to music, where Adele, as we all know, she was very successful last year. And she actually helped the United Kingdom boost their album sales and music sales so that now they accounted for 13% of all the global sales of recorded music in 2011. That's pretty good.
That's very good. I mean, and she's just the latest in a string of hit British artists. She was the best-selling artist. She had the best-selling album of the year last year, of course. And before her was Amy Winehouse, Coldplay, and Susan Boyle. So they've, you know, the British have really been on fire, as they often are. They often produce music way outside of their weight. You know, they're punching ahead of their weight class.
What are you trying to say about Adele?
I'm saying she's great. What do you mean?
Okay, I'm kidding. It was a weight joke.
Lord. No, I'm glad she hasn't been pressured. I want her to be healthy and happy, but I'm glad that she's considered a star and glamorous and wonderful and that she doesn't have any pressure to be, you know, bone thin. I get upset when I see these actors or musicians or people who the next time you see them, they don't even look like themselves. I find that very upsetting. So I'm thrilled that Adele is a happy person and not too happy because we want her music to be good and she has to be miserable to write great pop songs. But her album has sold 18 million copies around the world. Those are actual blockbuster album numbers. It's still possible in this day and age to sell a lot of copies. I hope she reaches 21. I hope she reaches 21 million copies. But that's
awesome. So that way the album 21 could sell 21 million copies.
Yeah, and eventually she will because 3 million more copies for the rest of her life. It's going to happen. But 18 million copies, those are real numbers. Those are real blockbuster numbers by any measure. So that's very exciting to see. It can still happen.
Well, you know, that album, 21, accounted for 1.6% of all the albums sold worldwide last year. That's an impressive figure.
Yeah, that's a hit.
Yeah, and as far as, you know, you mentioned that the UK British acts being big. They're big in the UK now, too. They're the biggest since 1997. They 52.7% of all albums sold in the UK were by UK artists.
That's only happened. That's the biggest since 1997. I'm surprised they haven't had a majority of ticket sale of music sales in those intervening years. Wow.
No.
I mean, with Oasis and Blur and all that, I'm a little surprised. I guess that was the early 90s was Oasis and Blur. I'm getting old. But the UK, great music home. They listen to music from all over the world, and their artists are terrific. So glad to hear they're back on top.
But you don't consider that a big deal then? That
I think it's a big deal that they haven't had 50% over the last 15 years.
Okay. Well, then,
you know, reverse of it. I don't think it's a big deal that they regained it. I'm a little surprised that for the past 15 years, they haven't had at least 50% of sales.
Okay, well, then in that case, it's time for Big Deal or Big Whoop, our weekly segment where we discuss the top headlines in entertainment and tell you whether they're really important or just overhyped nonsense. Our first story, the legal battle between the estate of author Mario Puzo and Paramount isn't over. You might recall we talked about this previously. You know, the battle may not be over, but they've both agreed to a new spin-off novel called The Family Corleone. And the profits for the Puzo estate will be held in escrow while they and the studio battle it out in court. The book details Vito Corleone's rise to power during the Depression and has already received some positive reviews. How is that even possible? The family's...
It came out last week.
Okay.
They agreed. They said, all right, the book can come out and we'll just hold the profits in escrow until we figure out who has the rights to it.
Got it. Okay. Well, the family's attorney, Bert Fields, had some choice words. He said, the deal is very interim and in no way takes away the sting of what Paramount did. Paramount extorted this by threatening to shut down the publication unless we agreed to do this. Paramount has violated the most basic rights in Puzo's contract, that he was reserving all book publishing rights. Big deal or big whoop, Michael?
It's a big whoop. It's a reasonable step, though, if Paramount was going to argue that the publication of the book harmed their franchise. Letting the book be published seems to harm the franchise, whether or not they had the right to block it or not. So they seem to be conceding that argument already. Now the question is just who has the rights to the profits. But Booklist liked it, sort of. They said it was it channeled the original really well and reminds you of Puzo's strength and says it's got a great finale. It may even make you want to see one more film. Not me, but that's what they said.
People who buy or rent movies on DVD and Blu-ray can look forward to more anti-piracy warnings. Six major studios have agreed to include 20 seconds of anti-piracy warnings that will appear before every movie and be impossible to skip or fast forward through. Because, of course, it's the people who have legally purchased or rented movies that need to endure such notices. Is this a big deal or a big whoop, Michael?
Oh, it's a big deal. Oh, my God. These notices drive me insane. I watch so many DVDs, and when you can't see, I know they're there. I understand that's fine. A, I think this should be at the end of the movies. And B, if they're at the front, you should be able to skip them. You don't have to see them every single time you put in a disc. It's so frustrating. And sometimes, a lot of times you can fast forward or skip or do something. When you can't, it drives me nuts. And to know that like six major studios are now going to make it impossible to, it just drives me insane.
For the lazy people
who... Oh, what, you have no opinion?
No, not really. I mean,
Not driven insane by them?
Nah, you know what? It's like 20 seconds, and I know that there's what can you do? I mean, they're putting them there for a reason. I understand why
there's
they're in
no reason. There's no good reason for them to be there. They could be at the end of the movie as a formality, but there's no reason why every time I watch put a DVD in a player, I have to sit there for 30 seconds and watch a thing telling me piracy is bad. That is stupid.
Okay, then on that note, I will go on to our next story.
All right.
For the lazy people who hate to fast forward through commercials, speaking of fast forwarding through things, the Dish Network has just made it avoiding ads easier than ever. The company that introduced the 30-second jump button, which, by the way, lets you leapfrog through ads easily by jumping 30 seconds, as well as a one-click way to record the entire primetime lineup of all the major networks and record up to six shows at once, has now added a new feature. Tape a show, and when you start to watch it after 1 a.m. the following day, it will automatically skip through all the commercials for you. Networks, needless to say, are really not pleased. Big deal or big whoop, Michael?
It's kind of a big deal in a way.
It's a huge deal. Yeah.
I mean, you can tape the whole primetime lineup with one button. You can tape six shows at once. My God, I'm tempted to get the Dish Network. I can only tape two shows at once, and it drives me crazy. I constantly have three shows overlapping each other, especially because a show goes 5 minutes over. It just drives me insane that I can only tape two shows at
once. This happens with every single show now, and it is annoying.
Yeah, it's very annoying because that five-minute thing means that show counts as a show for the next hour. And that means you can only tape one show in that next hour rather than two. And if you have a sporting event like baseball, forget about it. You know, God forbid you have a primetime lineup and a sporting event, you have to start eliminating what shows you tape. So these technological improvements, they tend to remain. They're not going to go away, no matter how much the networks hate them. And they're going to, spread. You know, they start on the satellite or they start here and there and they spread to everybody. Pretty soon we're going to have it on our own cable box and I can't wait.
Well, do you know who Maya Arul Pragasm is?
Nope.
She is MIA. Now she's been fairly, she's been keeping a low profile since her last album, which was MAYA was released in 2010.
Well, it's only 2 years ago.
Yeah. So she's been in India and London and she's producing another album. But in the meantime, it looks like she has been doing some work as an artist and she has created a label for Beck's Beer. Big deal or big whoop, Michael?
She's partnered with Beck's Beer to create a design a look, a label, like their whole label? Or is it like just a special?
It's a limited edition.
Oh, limited edition. MIA's doing a tie-in with Beck's Beer. That's a big whoop and bizarre. I heard she's also doing like the theme song for the WikiLeaks guy, Julian Assange. He's got some ridiculous TV show.
Yes,
she
is. I
know she's doing the theme song, but that makes sense for her brand. That makes sense for who she is. A Beck's Beer label tie-in. That sounds crazy.
Well, you know, she did start out as a visual artist.
Oh, and I'm not saying she has the visual skills to do it. It's just a tie-in with Beck's Beer. It's just weird. Okay.
Well, now, since we're on music, you know, Coachella feels like it just ended.
Oh, my God, it did just end. You and your Coachella.
Well, you know, it looks
I'm
like...
I'm just jealous because I never get to go.
Okay. Well, you know, you may have an extra chance to attend next year because there were some rumors swirling last week that they would not do just 2 weekends, but do 3 weekends.
So, okay.
And actually...
You just repeat their lineups for 3 weekends.
Yes, which that just seems like, wow, why would you do that? You know, this year, Coachella drew about 80,000 paid attendees.
Each weekend. So they doubled their attendance without making the place crazy.
That's right, which is, thank you very much, Coachella, for, you know, not making it too crazy.
Right.
And as I'm sitting here...
240,000 people if they go to 3 weekends.
Yeah, and as I'm sitting here reading all of this, I see in my inbox that Coachella has sent me an email and they are not doing 3 weekends. They are only going to be doing 2 weekends. And tickets go on sale on Thursday, almost a year before the actual event.
How long do you have to decide?
You have.
I assume they say to you, you can renew if you want, right?
No. That would be actually a good idea, and they do not do that.
Oh, as long as it was tagged to you and you couldn't just resell it, why wouldn't they do that?
I have no idea. They haven't thought of it yet. Well, you know, either way, I guess it's a big whoop because technically there aren't 3 weekends now. There are only 2. So the rumor is not true. But you know what is true? Whitney Houston's family is going to come together on a reality show. It looks like, you know, daughter Bobby Christina and mother Sissy are in talks to do this reality show for Lifetime. And it will focus on Pat Houston, who is the sister-in-law and manager of Whitney Houston. And she is also helping care for, you know, Bobby Christina, who is Whitney Houston's daughter. And the show promises to feature Bobby Christina and Sissy, as well as Houston's cousin Dionne Warwick, gospel singer Cece Winans, and other members of the Houston family. This all according to Billboard and Houston's representative. Big deal or big what, Michael?
Big creepy.
Big creepy, yes. I'd go with that.
It's very sad. I mean, this tragic death, and you said, let's do a reality show. It's just, ugh. I mean, ugh.
Yeah. Well, now, Andre 3000, do you remember him?
Of course.
I thought you were going to say, hey, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I set it up for you. It was a softball.
I'm not writing intros for the Grammys. Oh, snap.
Oh, my goodness. Well, he is, of course.
If he listens to the show, he might get annoyed at me.
And, of course, we all know we're talking about David Wilde, who writes.
We love and respect.
Yeah, we do.
And I wish he'd hire me to help him write the Grammys.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hey, I just gave you a freebie there.
That's right.
Well, Andre 3000, of course, he's a kind of a rapper, an actor, and a producer.
And member of Outkast.
And a member of Outkast.
Which is gone forever now, I guess.
Yes. Well, he is now attached to star in a film called All Is By My Side, which is an upcoming biopic written by John Ridley, who also wrote Red Tails and Three Kings. And John Ridley will also direct it. It is a biopic for Jimi Hendrix. There's only one problem. Jimi Hendrix's estate has not approved, nor do they condone, this particular film. Big deal or big whoop?
Well, big whoop, obviously. If you don't have the music, you don't want to make a biopic about Jimi Hendrix without his songs. It's crazy.
Yeah, a friend of mine used to work for the Jimi Hendrix estate, and he said they are very tough on who can use the music and for what reason, and who can use his likeness on different products.
Oh, it's a valuable property, of course.
And it was his job to run and chase people down. Now, speaking of valuable properties...
Valuable faces,
that's for sure. Brad Pitt is now going to be the new face of Chanel No. 5, the perfume. And this is the same perfume that Marilyn Monroe once said, it's all she wears to bed. And, you know, Nicole Kidman, Marion Cotillard, and Lauren Hutton have all been the face of Chanel No. 5. And now Brad...
Has there ever been another man?
No, he is the first male to ever be the face of Chanel No. 5. Big deal or big whoop?
Well, it's a big whoop, of course, in the scheme of things, but it's amusing and funny. Are they marketing to men now, or is it just this is the man that you want to attract or be with? Or is he going to be wearing it? Or is it just that the women who wear it get Brad Pitt? I wonder what the idea is. I mean, it's a metrosexual world. Why not get men to start wearing Chanel No. 5 as well? Why not, I guess? But maybe the idea is just women get to be with Brad Pitt if they wear Chanel No. 5.
I think it's the latter.
Yeah, probably, I guess. But wow, it's kind of amusing.
Well, that actually wraps up Big Deal or Big Whoop for this week. And normally we'd move right along into Inside Baseball, but I've been traveling. Michael has been traveling. I'm headed to Cannes. You're headed back to Alabama to be with your father, who is ill. And so we didn't get an Inside Baseball story for this week, but we promised to have one next week. And maybe we'll even try and do a few reports from Cannes, maybe a Google Hangout or two, Michael.
Cool. Well, maybe someday we'll be all video.
Yes. Well, just trying to get the audio podcast out each week is a lot of work. So as much as I would love to do that, I can't see where I would find the time.
Although given the money you're paid, I think you should find the time.
Okay. Well, that's true, actually. And actually, you can actually subscribe to our audio podcast in iTunes, the Zune Marketplace, or Stitcher. You can rate and review the shows on either of those podcast aggregators. You can receive an email every time we post a new episode, or you can subscribe to us via RSS. You know what? Just subscribe. That's all we ask. Links to all of the stories that we've discussed on today's episode can be found on our website, showbizsandbox.com. That's also where you'll find all those ways to subscribe to us. Did I mention you should subscribe to us, by the way?
And rate us on iTunes.
Yes, you should rate us on iTunes. Or you could follow us on Twitter, where our username is showbizsandbox.
Where we tell you when a show's going to be late.
That's right. Or you could follow us on Facebook, where our username is showbizsandbox. Or you can email us, dirt@showbizsandbox.com. That's dirt@showbizsandbox.com. You can also leave us a voicemail. The number to call is 888-567-SAND. That's 888-567-7263. All of that information, as well as ways to donate to us so that I, can, as Michael mentioned, get rich and we can do a video podcast. All of that information on showbizsandbox.com. Now, the music you hear at the beginning and end of each show is by the popular indie rock group MGMT. They can be found on MySpace or on their website, who is mgmt.com. Michael has a website. It is?
It is michaelgiltz.com.
Okay, well, hopefully your hearing clears up in the next couple
please
of days.
Please send in your home remedies.
Yes, please. dirt@showbizsandbox.com. All emails will be forwarded to Michael. Some of my writing can be found on celluloidjunkie.com. And until next week, play nice.
No, seriously, what?